you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Welcome back to the Schmo Zone podcast. This is episode number 88. I'm Dave Schmolenson, a.k.a. The Schmo. My co-host is...
Helen Yee with Helen Yee Sports.
And today's guest is the number 6th ranked flyweight in the world, Kaikara France, in the flesh. Thanks for joining the Schmo Zone. Don't blink.
Hey, you can remember the name. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on. Always good to catch up and chat about, you know, everything that's going on.
Well, I'm glad you're still in town selfishly, but unselfishly, I know you probably want to be back home in New Zealand and everything. You have your family here, but we were talking a little bit before this all started. You still have to wait for your opportunity to get home and that lottery.
Yeah, it's you know, crazy times. I thought we were way past this back in 2020, but you know, COVID is you know, hanging around. So yeah, New Zealand now, things are opening up a little bit, but yeah, there's still, you know, our borders are shut, so. You know, Dan's been over in Vegas for a few months now, and I've been over here. I'll be over here until mid-January. So I'm lucky enough I got a room for New Zealand Sport, which is, you know, they help out high-performance athletes in New Zealand. So they're lucky enough to give me a room as a priority. So I'll be back mid-Jan, and then you do 7 days in your hotel, and then you can go into the community. So over Christmas and New Year's, I didn't want to be away from my family, my wife and my son, so I brought them along with me for the ride. So it's nice to have them here. We're going to go to Hawaii next week, just chill out, you know, all that hard work that we did for the camp, and then obviously fight week and all the results, so we can put our feet up and just relax and just soak it in.
Is the high of the big victory starting to kind of simmer down right now, or, you know, a little over a week since the big moment, since the big victory, probably the biggest one of your career so far?
Yeah, definitely it's my biggest win in my career, but this is yeah, every morning I wake up and I was like, did that really happen? Like it couldn't have gone any better, you know, from the lead up to the actual fight, and then the finish and getting a bonus, and you know, everyone really doubting me and you know, kind of overlooking me, and especially Cody, you know, overlooking me, already telling Dana I'll be the alternate for the next flyweight title fight. So yeah, the whole lead up was a weird one. You know, I knew that, you know, I'd been putting in the work, so when I turned up on fight week, I was focused. You know, I only had one person in front of me, and that's all I was focused on, which was Cody. And you know, he's too busy trying to fight everyone else but me, and won't even acknowledge me, won't even really. It was kind of like I was set up, you know, he was getting set up for the title shot, and I was, like you said, just a pawn and just another stepping stone for him to build him up for flyweight. So you know, I was here to spoil the party, and that's what I did. So it's pretty satisfying when in your head, you know, you've been visualizing this, and then it all works out pretty much to a T how you thought the fight was going to go. And yeah, to silence a lot of critics and to get a lot more fans, especially in America, that now know my name, and they're like, okay, this guy's the one to watch. So yeah, it's very satisfying.
Yeah, because on that note of him not really... Or it seemed like, in your opinion, if he was overlooking you. I noticed in the press conference, he was just kind of going back and forth with Sean O'Malley. Mm. And you were, so I noticed during the face-off, didn't you say something to him, right? Like,
yeah.
Hey, I'm your opponent for this weekend.
Yeah, I said to him, don't worry about Sean, worry about me. And he's like, what do I got to worry about you for? Like, this is the energy I was getting from him, the whole, you know, his whole demeanor was just like, this is nothing. This is just, you're lucky you're here. That's the kind of vibe I got of him. So it kind of just lit a fire underneath me. I was already fired up when I got this matchup. You know, I've been motivated since day one, 4 months out. But on fight week, it just added to what was to come. And I was like, oh, I'm just channel all that energy and bring it into the octagon. So I'm not really a talker. You know, I don't need to build the fight up then more need be. You know, there wasn't nothing personal, but when he didn't really acknowledge me and you know, he didn't really respect that. You know, I was his opponent in front of him. I was just like, okay, I'm gonna have to show this guy what's up. So at the weigh-ins, I did a New Zealand. You know, being Māori, you know, it's tradition that you set the tone for what's to come, and our national team, the All Blacks, they do a haka before they play, and it's just I guess add to the atmosphere. You know, this is hostile territory and it's like kill or be killed. So I come from a warrior mentality that my ancestors would have fought on a battlefield over land, you know, hundreds of years ago. So I'm just the modern day version of that. So I was channeling that when I stepped onto that weigh-in, and it's something that kind of comes naturally. And I knew Americans or people that have never seen it wouldn't get it. They'd be like, oh, what's he doing? This is disrespectful. He's just slitting his throat. But, you know, this is me showing respect. This is me representing my culture. I don't have to change who I am. I'm just bringing it to the spotlight. And that, you know, that's what I'd love to do. I love to represent my people. And I didn't have to change. You know, I just brought everything that I've been brought up doing and then brought it to the world. So when I did that, and it's called a pukana, which means a facial expression. So it's pretty much to try to intimidate your opponents and just to let them know that this is for real. This is what's about to happen. So I was a little taste. He just took it as like he was laughing it off, which in the All Blacks, when they compete against other teams, when they've laughed at the haka or like smiled at it and stuff like that, they it's always a smash. Like the All Blacks will smash them in the rugby game. So the same thing happened for this fight. So yeah, pretty special to kind of have that moment in time where I guess my culture was on display, but then to bring that in with me when I stepped in the ring. There's so much more to it, you know, when I step into the ring now. I'm bringing, you know, all my people that I represent. I'm channeling that energy, and yeah, you felt that on fight night.
Yeah, I went to the University of Arizona, and I remember I was there from 2008 through 2012, and there was a lot of Samoan athletes on the team, and they did the haka dance as a pregame ritual for the American football game. So I'm very well tuned to what that warrior spirit is, and you challenge that for all the laymen who didn't recognize that in the moment.
Yeah.
But going back, what were you going to say?
Oh, I also want to add, I loved Israel's reaction.
Yeah, the best day. You know, that's family. You know, that's not just a teammate, that's not just a friend. The way he reacts and his emotions, that's like raw. You can't fake that. That's just the kind of atmosphere and environment that we have at our gym. You know, we get more nervous when our teammates fight than when we fight. He's, you know, a very good friend of mine, and I know for this camp he saw a difference in me. You know, I was a lot more focused, especially what was on stake, you know, fighting a former champ. I just knew the kind of mindset and the level that I had to tap into and the standard that I needed to get to. So I pushed the boundaries this camp. You know, I went to a lot of I did a lot of mental work as well as physical, obviously, but just, you know, tapping into that 1% that place where you need to be able to go to if you need to in the fight, and just zone in. Like the most calmest place in the world is the bottom of a pool. Like with our breathing coach, we work a lot with Dave Wood, who's he's a like lifeguard rescuer, so and a first response paramedic. So he, in his job, you know, you have to be calm, relaxed, because usually he's the first on scene, or he's trying to save people's lives when he's risking them out of from drowning. So we integrate that into high performance, and he's come up for an awesome system that we use for at City Kickboxing. So it's got nothing to do with fighting or combat training, but you know, it's got everything to do with staying calm and staying controlled and controlling what you can. So like I said before, being underneath a pool and kind of just zoning out, thinking about nothing but being present, being right now. A lot of stuff we do on our trainings to try to emulate that and simulate just controlling what you can. So when I stepped in the ring, you know, I felt so calm, so present, so relaxed. All the pressure was on Cody. I could see that he was, you know, a bit more reactive when I was fainting, a lot more, hesitant to exchange. That might be from the weight cut, maybe insecurities about how his body's going to react, how durable he's going to be. The fight, we had a few different scenarios that we'd been training. We didn't realize what kind of game plan he was going to bring in, if he's going to come in like a usual self, guns blazing, trying to take me on the first round, or if he was going to be that counter, which he's one of the best at counter fighting. So yeah, we just had to draw it out of him, use our feints, use our presence rather than committing too much. Otherwise, that's when he's most dangerous, is when he's leading the dance, when he's trying to draw you into things. But yeah, we caught him earlier than expected with the right hand. And then, I knew once I landed that flush shot, it was all downhill from there. So from that right hand, I just kind of had to stay patient. I could hear Dan Hooker yelling, just faint, take your time. But yeah, once I started going into the body to make him forget about the head, and then I set it back up and went back upstairs. So hit him with the three-piece combo, right hand, jab, and then right uppercut. And then, he was just stunned from there, and then got the finish. So yeah, it couldn't have gone any better, like I said before. And just happy to live up to my nickname again and carry on this momentum.
So there's a lot of talk about him going down to 125 pounds.
Yeah.
How did he feel compared to other 125-pounders? And during fight week and just from your observations at face-offs and stuff like that, how do you feel the weight cut in him at that weight truly was?
You know, you're always going to say it's the best weight cut ever. You know, when you're making that cut down to flyweight or the weight below. I've fought big flyweights before Piva. You know, people might have forgot. I fought him in Melbourne, and he was a very big flyweight. And, you know, he wasn't that much smaller than Sean O'Malley, who's a big bantamweight. And he, you know, he's probably had the hardest head that I've fought. I nearly broke my hand on his head. And the first punch, I cracked my wrist, and I buckled it. I couldn't even throw it for the rest of the fight. But I took time after that fight to let it heal. With Cody, it's just different. You know, first time making this weight, you don't want it to be the first time in an actual fight. You want to do a practice cut in your gym and spar hard, and then see how your body recovers. That would be the smart way of doing it, right? So if this was his first time doing it, it wasn't the right decision, I don't think. I've kind of taken offense when people were saying, "Oh, Cody's done. Look at his chin." It's like there was so much more to this than Cody, his durability. Obviously, getting knocked out in a lot of his fights wouldn't have helped it, but it wasn't just about that. It was precision. It was accuracy. You got to give credit when credit's due. You know, everyone was counting me out. So when I got the win, when I made it look easy, people were like, "Oh, you know, Cody's done." It was like, well, you got to give me some credit as well.
Well, yeah, you firmly believe, and it's probably likely too, had Cody beat you, he'd be next in line for a title shot. So you could come from the line and say, look, I beat him. I'm next in line for the title shot, because you would have given it to this guy had he won.
Exactly. That's exactly how I approached Dana White. I said, there's the title shot right there. And he said, oh, we'll talk. So it's kind of like a double standard. I know he's already been given a title shot, and he got COVID, so he had to pull out. But, you know, they're definitely building him up to be the next in line. So I was like, well, why does that make any difference for me? You know, I take him out. I've silenced a lot of doubters. And on such a stacked card, last pay-per-view for the year, UFC 269 on a main card. Pretty rare for a flyweight fight to be on a main card. It doesn't really happen. And to make people be like, oh, this is exciting. You know, look at these guys. They're going for knockouts. They're going for finishes. And this guy should be the next in line. So there's a lot of people saying, you know, you got one more fight left before you get the title. But I'll argue with our team at City Kickboxing, with Eugene and Ash, they're saying, well, why does he need one more? You know, you're going to give that guy the title shot. So give Kai the title shot. So we'll see what happens. We're in talkings now with the UFC. Nothing's been set just yet. But, I want to stay active next year. If that means I have to get one more in before the title, then so be it. You know, our ultimate goal is to be the champion, so I don't want to just wait it out. I'd rather, you know, fight and make a claim and still continue this momentum in this run. Yeah.
Well, I saw on Twitter Askar Askarov. He's trying to call you out.
Yeah, I haven't even responded. Like, it's my time. Like, you got to let me enjoy this moment. Yeah. You know, a lot of people are saying like, oh, Kai doesn't deserve it. I was like, well, but where are these other flyweights? They weren't on this card. They weren't fighting the former champ. I was, so. You got to let me just soak this in. But, you know, obviously I didn't go up in the rankings, which I was surprised. I thought I would have. Being number six now, I thought I would have bumped into the number five. If you go through that whole top five in the flyweights, you could argue that I would be above everyone. Just just their track record. You know, Askarov didn't make weight his last fight, coming off so many decisions. You know, people don't. The UFC is about making money and being entertaining. No one's going to buy that pay-per-view if they put him in front of the title holder, in front of Moreno. Obviously, Figueroa has got the next title shot, so he's June 22nd. I did tell Dana White, I messaged him. I said, if you need an alternate, I can happily step in. You know, I didn't get injured, didn't really get touched, so I can make the weight if need be. But yeah, they're kind of, they're not brushing it off, but I think they've got other plans, so... If that is the go, then like I said before, I'd happily, you know, take the number one contender spot.
Did they approach you about potentially being an alternate for that January 22nd?
No, I approached them. I just said I put it out to Ash, our manager, and he said, yeah, I'll have a talk with the UFC. So
if they said yes, would you stay in America?
If they did, yeah, for sure. But we haven't got a response, so that pretty much says everything. But with everyone in that top five, you can make a claim for everyone. You know, Rovell, number five, obviously I lost to him, but he's coming off two losses, so, you know, he's not really in the title mix. Alex Perez missed weight, and the fight was off, and now they've been rescheduled against him in a match now. So, you know, that he's got a fight booked. Next one, Alexander Pantoja. Obviously, he's probably got the best claim to get a title shot because he's beat Moreno twice, once in the Ultimate Fighter, and then once outside. But, you know, he's been injured, been out for a little while. And then, like I said, Askarov missed weight. I don't know why you would reward someone for missing weight with a title shot. So, yeah, like I said before, me fighting a former champ and coming off two knockouts as well as three performances bonuses. So, I feel like I should be the next in line.
Yeah, very well said. And you do have a big claim to get that next title shot. But speaking of the title shot, who do you think wins the trilogy between Brandon Moreno and Davison?
I feel like Moreno is going to get the job done. Like, I feel like he's too well-rounded for Figueroa. Figueroa is dangerous. That first round is definitely his best round. But I don't see it going any differently like this than the second fight. Just feel like Moreno will mix it up a lot better. And, I saw Figueroa's training with Suhudo doing wrestling. I think he was a part of, what's her name, Wei Ling's camp.
Yep.
and helping them out. But I don't know if Henry Suhudo's going to help with wrestling for the Moreno fight. I just feel like his jiu-jitsu is too good to stay on the ground and to keep him there. And then he's got good hands, you know, he's got good boxing. Figueroa is quite one-dimensional by being the bully, coming forward. Loves to have his hands down by his hips and throw hard. It's quite easy to read. I feel like Moreno will get the job done. I don't know what he'll catch him with, either submission or maybe even just stop him. I feel like Moreno will remain the title holder.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll get to the Henry Cejudo thing a little bit later down in the podcast too. But going back to this trilogy fight, is there something to be said about going into your next fight, going to the guy who you just lost to and your psyche there, and just by the style of how he lost to that fight, was it 261? I know Izzy was on the card. Leon Edwards was on that card in Phoenix. And Izzy was on that card too against Marvin Vettori. Where do you think that's a disadvantage ready going into that fight knowing how that second one went?
No, definitely. It's all about having that 1% advantage and the mental warfare. You know that you've just lost to him. So it takes a lot just to get back in there, you know, build yourself back up, build that confidence. If Figueroa loses, you know, that's a few in a row now, so it's hard to come back from that. But, you got to have some great men around you to build you back up, and tell you what you need to hear, not what you want to hear. You know, being the champ, you kind of get, not special treatment, but you get to do it your way. Sometimes you need to take that power away and just become a student again and just be all ears and just listen, you know. It's all different, you know. At City Kickboxing, that's what we do, you know. If you're the champ or if you're just a newbie, if you're late, you're late, and it doesn't matter if you're the world champ, you've got 100 push-ups. So that keeps you accountable, that keeps you honest, and I guess that keeps you grounded. So that's the kind of mindset and atmosphere that we have at our gym. So I don't know about other gyms. I know in America there's so many big camps that it gets quite clicky. There's different teams inside the teams. It's not like that at all at Elgin. You know, there's one team, there's one time you turn up. If you're not on time, you got punishment. If you're late, you get fined as well. So it keeps you, you need that kind of discipline as well as accountability. And, you know, when we have fights, we turn up for the guy that's fighting. And then you know that when you have a fight, the other guys will turn up for you. So it's like a full circle, you know. You want to give time and you got to give it as a two-way street. So when you're training on the weekends, when, you know, the gyms are usually closed, you know, you've got guys that will come in because it's, you know, mutual. They'll do the same for you. So, yeah, it's pretty cool to have that.
So when you envision fighting for the title, it would be against Brandon Moreno. It'd be a rematch from UFC 245. Yeah. Why is it going to be different? And we'd hear Anu that night.
It's going to be a lot different, you know. Obviously, when we fought, you know, I was still finding my feet in the UFC. I was on a big win streak then, but I was still developing my skills. And that confidence as well, you know, getting in the UFC, you're fighting the best in the world. So your kind of mentality has to be invincible. You can't have any chink in your armor when it comes to believing in yourself, your skills. And I guess it's a learning curve, you know, when you take a loss, and it was a close fight, you know, I dropped him twice in the first round. He did well to adjust in the second round. He kicked me a lot with his switch kick. And then the third round was close, but I just took too much damage, that the judges gave it to him. But, you know, we've developed, a lot since that fight. He's obviously the champ now, and he's done a lot since then. But it makes for a great story. Rematching in 2022. I see it now. Me and him squaring off in a 5-round fight. Maybe, you know, if the UFC come back to New Zealand or Australia, we could do it there. I know we're missing it. We miss live events like that in that side of the world. So, this is me obviously predicting the future. But, yeah, I would love a rematch. You know, stylistically, it's a great fight. You know, he's scrappy. I'll come forward. But, yeah, I feel like my stand-up is so much better since that fight, and I'll be going for those kill shots. So last time I dropped him twice, this time I'll put him away. So I believe I'm the best. You know, it's a different kind of mentality. When you train with world champions, it definitely drip feeds onto you, and the high caliber and standard that we have our gym so high that you've got no excuse but to get better. Otherwise you get left behind, and you know, you've got to constantly evolve, and that's why we've tapped into other specialists, other coaches, to get that 1% advantage. Because when it's fight week, when you're stepping in there, there's no, you got to be so honest and honest with yourself and say, have I done enough? Have I put everything into this? And if you've ticked all the boxes in the camp, then there's no excuse. That's why we believe so much in ourselves. So yeah.
I know when you fought Brandon Moreno, that was about 1 year after you made your UFC debut back in December 2018.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, like, when you fought him in 2019, did you ever foresee that he would become champion in the division?
He's always been, like, the dark horse, like, in the Ultimate Fighter.
Ultimate Fighter, too.
He was ranked number 16 out of all of the fighters. So I remember there was like alternates that were in the house with us waiting for any of us to kind of miss weight or like fail or drug test and stuff. And everyone was pretty much saying, oh yeah, if Brandon's out, I'm going to be in. I'll take his spot kind of thing. And then, you know, he went to war with Pantoja, who was ranked number one at the time. And it made everyone realize, oh, this kid's something. He's actually really good and he's raw. He's talented. But he's got that fire, that Mexican fire that you always talk about. So, yeah, when he got a late call-up, short notice call-up, and then was actually in the UFC for, I think, Lewis Mocha and got a really good submission win, a quick submission, that opened a lot of doors for him. You know, people started to recognize him. But, yeah, he actually ended up getting cut from the UFC. When I was making my UFC debut, the flyweight division was not in a good state, and everyone was saying that this division was going to diminish and pretty much going to dissolve, and people were going to just be like, oh, bantamweight's the lightest weight class now, don't worry about flyweight, there's no competition. But yeah, so he got cut, and then he got re-signed, and then he started making a run at the title, and now to see him the champ, you know, that just shows what kind of character he has, and he's done really well. So I'm happy for him. But you know, it's a fight that I always can go back on and be like, okay, he's the champ now. Going three rounds of him definitely gives me confidence, knowing that I'm definitely right there in with the best guys in the world. But a few little adjustments, I could have won that fight. And my coach Eugene always tells me that, you know, like, this guy isn't that much better. We could have changed a few things and it would have been our fight. So, like I said before, it's a big learning curve for me. Brings me a lot of confidence knowing that, you know, I did go three rounds with the champ. And now beating a former champ, coming off, I've got 11 knockouts on my record now, 2 knockouts in the UFC, and four bonuses in the UFC now. Momentum's definitely on my side now, so I'm just going to run with it. I'm, you know, already back in the gym now, already staying ready. Having my family here, you know, that keeps me grounded. You know, I go to the gym and then come back home. You know, I'm in full dad mode, just doing what I can and just being there. You know, this is life moments now, because when I fought, that was my son's first ever UFC event. So to have him and my wife in the same stadium when I was fighting, to have it all work out like that, you know, it couldn't have gone any better. And he's going to always remember that that's my dad. And yeah, pretty special.
Well, all the knockouts that you have, is that how you got your nickname, Don't Blink?
Yeah, it's something that I got given to me. So when I was in Thailand, I was based over there for about 4 years, training out of Tiger Muay Thai in Phuket, Thailand, just fighting around Asia. So I was in the Asia circuit, fighting in, I think 1 year I fought 9 times in 9 different countries. Every month I fought, and I was doing it for a visa run at the time as well. So I had to leave the Thailand border, fight in another country, and then I could come back and then they'll extend my stay. So, you know, I fought in, you know, so many different places. Dan Hooker was my corner man at the time, so me and him would just float around. So, you know, I fought in Taiwan, Indonesia, Philippines, Japan, China, Guam. Where else? In Thailand. You know, I pretty much fought everywhere in Asia. So I became a kind of household name over there. And in one point, I fought in Taiwan. I won by a 9-second knockout. It was pretty much the first punch. 2 weeks later, I fought on a cruise ship. So it came from Malaysia to Phuket overnight. So Malaysia to Thailand. The fights weren't going on when the boat was moving. It was docked at a port. And then over at night, all my teammates from Tiger Muay Thai came onto the boat and they could all watch. And that fight was about 12 seconds long. I fought a Filipino guy. So in the space of 1 month, I, you know, had less than 30 seconds of ring time. And then in that year, I ended up racking up 5 first round finishes all by knockout. So people were like, man, if you don't blink, you'll miss this guy's fights. And then that's when I got picked up for the Ultimate Fighter. So, yeah, just kind of stuck with the name. So when I was in the UFC and I wasn't getting finishes, I was like, man, I'm going to have to change my nickname. And I'm just letting everyone down. But yeah, I'm glad I got to reinstate the name and do it justice.
Now, you fought on a cruise ship, so they put a ring?
Yeah, it was on the top deck, so there was 10 stories, and it was right next to the pool. So it was, like,
that's
open.
That's cool.
Yeah, it was first of its kind, so.
No seasickness?
No, didn't get any sea legs. I was sweet. We did get the party on the boat for 2 days after, which was pretty cool.
That's awesome.
But, yeah, it was pretty light work. It was pretty funny because my opponent was for the Philippines, and a lot of the workers were Filipino on the cruise ship, so they all came out of the kitchen and they were all watching us. Man, this guy's got the hometown advantage.
It's so funny, a cruise ship, because I remember during the beginning of the pandemic and everyone was guessing, hey, where can the USC put on events?
Yeah,
One of the topics of conversation was a cruise ship.
Yeah, it was.
And so it can be done.
It can be done before. They were always saying, like, if it rains, we're screwed, because there was no roof on it. And if that was to happen, they were going to do it in, like, the theater area on the cruise ship, but obviously it all worked out. Yeah, and we got to party for 2 days after, so yeah, it could be done, you know, there's a blueprint there. I'll do it again if the UFC wanted to do it.
So the house you're staying at is Dan Hooker's. Does he live there, or is he renting it? Because I know he's trying to move his family here to the United States, and are we going to get a second branch of City Kickboxing here in the United States?
I guess never say never. In this time, day and age, things are changing weekly. You know, so many things happen so quickly. As of now, Dan's in New York with his family for Christmas. So He just said, here's the keys, just tidy up after yourself. So it's pretty nice. It's just an apartment, you know. It's just off the strip, so close to everything, close to the PI, so convenient more than anything. And it's just nice being just having away from the craziness of the strip and being in Vegas and just being, I guess, normal and, having my family there. So, pretty lucky to have him sort me out. But, yeah, he been looked after a lot by the UFC, so... Yeah, he's a great teammate. You know, he's our team captain. He's the leader. You know, he steps up, no excuses, and just gets the job done. I've definitely taken Dan's career as a blueprint and like just a role model for me. Just the ups and downs that he's had in his career, but you know, he's always stayed true to who he is. And a lot of fighters in New Zealand really see him as like the pinnacle because he was the first fighter to get signed from New Zealand. Based out of New Zealand, not based overseas. So, he's definitely one of the pioneers for us. Yeah.
So I have a hunch because I don't know what we're recording this podcast today. It probably is out tomorrow. Yeah. I think Dana White talked about that they've tried to book a fight with Tony Ferguson. My guess is they're trying to book Tony Ferguson and Dan Hooker.
Oh, yeah?
I think that would be a great fight.
It would be a great fight, but I don't know because Dan's been teasing the idea of dropping down to featherweight, so... There's that in the mix now, so I don't know. I've heard other things as well. That would be a great fight, but I've heard other top five featherweights that he's got on his hit list. So
you think firmly that his next fight will be at featherweight, 145?
Don't quote me on that. But yeah, I think it would be. He said his weight cut was easy. He doesn't walk around that heavy, so for him, I feel like this is his next move. But it's a lot different than the first time when he was making his featherweight run. His body was a lot different. He was kind of cutting too much and not seeing the advantages of cutting all that weight because obviously bouncing back and making the weight and then recovering and then fighting was a lot on his body. But now he's fine-tuned it a lot better because he's walking around a lot lighter. So for him... Yeah, I feel like that could be his next move, but I don't know. He's a fan favorite fight. Whatever fight makes sense, whatever fight's the most exciting and the bigger one, that he will always take it. Yeah.
There seems to be a good alliance, though, between freestyle MMA, Joe, and obviously with Eugene and City Kickboxing, though. That won't create any type of rift with Volkanovski and everything like that, 145?
Yeah, I don't know. Because obviously him in the lightweight division, him and Brad were both teammates and good friends, so it's a weird dynamic with teammates being in the same division. And if he does drop to featherweight, I don't know how that will go down. But, it's just something that once it happens, then you would obviously make the decision. Maybe just take the corners away and not have any corner and just let them deal with it. And just it would just be like sparring. So, we'll see. I guess he's got to go through, a few top featherweights. But, Dan's such a fan favorite fight. I don't think it would take him long to get to, the top fighters at featherweight. There's so many good matchups here. You've got Korean Zombie. You've got Yao Ye as a rematch. You've got Ortega. Some good matchups.
Ortega and Volkanovski, that was, your fight of the year?
Yeah, I just think because of what we saw as a five-round fight, and it wasn't just a standing fight. All the escapes that Volkanovski was able to make and how competitive that fight was. It was such a fun fight, and I think with all the great fights, there's so many great fights that went on. I feel like that one's kind of lost in the shuffle, but to me, just watching that cage side, to me was my fight of the year.
That was special. I remember just being just on edge the whole time, and I don't even feel like it should have gone past the fourth round if you have to get picked up and put on a stool, but I'm glad it did. I'm glad it did because it did make for a better fight. And, Ortega, even though I thought he was out, he's stuck in there and he's tough. He's tough as hell. So, that was a great fight. So many close submissions. That guillotine was so tight. I couldn't breathe. I could feel myself suffocating. But, I knew Alex would have never tapped. He's so stubborn. He's so durable. People don't realize his ground game is so legit. He's probably got one of the heaviest games around, pound for pound. He's so strong. And on top when he's got you, and his stand up has come a long way as well. Being at training at City Kickboxing, he's definitely learned a lot from what we our systems had to give, and you saw that in the Max fights, and now it's so complete, his game, you know, his wrestling, his stand-up, and his jiu-jitsu is, you know, obviously that's why he's so doing so well, and for so many years being so undefeated. So yeah, it's, I don't think he's losing that belt anytime soon.
So is UFC 271 official? Izzy Whittaker too? Is that Houston? Because, you know, Izzy and the management and everything like that, but it's happening, right?
Yeah, well, we've got three guys on the card. We've got Israel, we've got our other teammate, Carlos Olberg, and then Blood Diamond is debut. So a lot of, they're all, you know, all kickboxers that have made their transition to MMA. So that's what makes it exciting. Obviously, they don't have a massive MMA record, three fights for Bloods. And same when Carlos made his debut. But, you know, they've got so much experience in boxing and kickboxing, you know, hundreds of fights. So Bloods is so unorthodox that you just don't know what he's going to throw, which makes it so exciting for MMA, because if you've got small gloves, he's definitely made for the sport. Like, he's just a human highlight reel. So expect fireworks for him, because I just don't know what he's going to do. Carlos, coming off a loss, his debut in the UFC, he learned a lot from that fight, experience-wise. You know, when he smelt blood, swarmed, got tired, and then he just got caught. So, you know, he was definitely winning that fight. And I feel bad for his next opponent, because he's going to definitely come out guns blazing again, but he'll definitely get the job done. And then Izzy making his rematch against Whittaker. You know, Whittaker was saying in the lead up to my fight, he didn't say anything in the press in an interview that I had with Alex, and Whittaker was sitting right next to Alex. And then after the interview, they're like, "Rob, why didn't you say anything to Kai?" And he's like, "Oh, I just feel awkward. You know, obviously he's Izzy's teammate. I don't want to be fake nice and tell him something when he's leading into his fight." And then after the interview, when I was speaking, he's like, "Oh, I actually like him." After I just heard him, I was like, "Oh, I want him to win." So I don't have anything bad to say about Rob. You know, that's him and Izzy's beef, if they have any beef. I support New Zealand and Australia when we come over here, just like, you know, me and Ty, we're just the same. So there's nothing but love, mutual respect. You know, even though Israel's my good friend and teammate, you got to respect every fighter. So I want to see a great fight. I don't think it's going to go any differently than the first fight. I feel like Israel's going to do exactly the same as he did before, catch him.
Speed?
But, yeah, speed kills. And Izzy, you know, he's a sniper. He'll find the shot and he'll put him away. And I've seen a different fire in Izzy as well. This camp, he's a lot more focused than you know, he's always focused, but I just see a difference in him for this fight, and he's working a lot with the breathing coach, our sports psychologist, and just doing everything he can to make sure that he keeps that belt. So I'm excited to see this Izzy coming in for the 2022, for that February fight. And I just don't see it going any differently.
You think the Blachowicz fight lit a new fire underneath him, you know, tasting that first defeat in the UFC and people saying, "Oh, he can't wrestle. You got to get on top of him." And obviously what he did to Marvin and how he's been able to bounce back. You think that lit a new fire in him?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. When you taste the defeat and you realize that winning isn't, you know, you're not always going to win. And that made him, I guess, go over everything and made him realize, okay, if I do have to take calculated risks and go up weight classes, I've got to make sure that I'm ticking all the boxes in my own weight class. And, you know, he can lap the division again. There's so many, there's exciting fights still at middleweight, you know, gets past Whittaker, the Strickland, got a fight coming up. There's obviously the Brazilian that Izzy fought in kickboxing, Alex
Pereira.
He's in the UFC now. And he's coming
over to Shera.
Yeah, he came coming off a big win. So, I feel like that's a great matchup. You know, if he does well in the UFC, he's got to get through a few wrestlers first, and then you'll realize, okay, this guy can cut it in the UFC. But yeah, so many good matchups for Izzy. But yeah, I don't feel like he's losing that belt anytime soon. Izzy or Alex, you know, so these guys are the best in the world, and you know, they're so dominant. It feels like no one can touch them.
Were you at the Apex fights this past weekend?
Yeah.
Justin Taffa?
Yeah. Justin Taffa.
And Derek Lewis getting the knockout record, the knockout heavyweight king. I saw you were there for that too.
Yeah. It was a great fight for Justin. Obviously, he had a lot of injuries this camp. No excuses, obviously, missing weight. But yeah, he just to get to Vegas, he had to go through so many obstacles. So I was happy for him to get the job done. It's a small world. He's actually my wife's cousin. So, So they, you know, grew up together. And then, the different last name. But, yeah, it's crazy.
Is that how you met your wife, like, through him?
No.
Oh, okay. No. It just happened to be
the connection. They're like, oh, that's my cousin. And, yeah.
You fight in the smallest weight division. He fights in the heaviest weight division. But, yeah, he was just the first heavyweight in UFC history to miss weight.
Yeah, not the greatest achievement. And I saw at the end of the interviews, like, so what's your New Year's resolution? And he's like, oh, to make weight.
Finally, where it makes sense for somebody, yeah, right? Exactly. To make, yeah. No, it works.
But I'm happy for him. But yeah, he's definitely learned a lot from this week. I saw him last night, actually. So, it's when we're over here, and you know, he's training in Australia with Mark Hunt and Ty and you know, a lot of Polynesians in Australia. But you know, this is the movement of combat sports in that area. You know, these guys are born and bred to do this, you know, and now you're seeing them in the UFC, and it's just, the potential is, you know, limitless, and you're starting to see that in their fights. I knew he was going to get a knockout. It's just different with heavyweights that know how to use their power. It doesn't take much, even though the kick landed flush on his guard. Yeah, it's too much. But yeah, it's exciting, especially, you know, for Ty as well, coming off so many good knockouts. He's definitely a contender. I remember I made my UFC debut on his fight. He headlined against Junior Dos Anjos in Adelaide, and this was Mark Hunt's last fight. It wasn't a good night for the boys. Mark Hunt, Ty, and Tyson Pedro all lost, and I was the only one that won that night. And then he came on this little bit of a slump, three in a row. He lost. So to see him now back in, you know, the mix of so many wins by knockout, just coming with a big win against Greg Hardy, and now Ty beating his opponent 2 weeks ago. Yeah, he's doing amazing things, and it's momentum. You know, you just got to back yourself, believe in yourself, and you get the job done.
Four straight knockouts for him.
Yeah.
Have you ever done a shoey with him?
No, I stay away from that guy. I was at the after party with him in Vegas after our wins. You know, such a special moment, and you know, soaking it in. But then I'm like, okay, this is enough. Get away from me. I'm not doing any shoeys. I'll leave it to you, bro. This ain't for me.
Well, I noticed you're wearing a hat. Just want to intervene real quick that today's podcast is brought to you by Bluemon, some of the best hair products out there. Do you shave your head?
I've had to shave my head in a lockdown because we had the barbers were shut. We couldn't go to hairdressers. So I had to. Oh, no, my wife actually shaved my head for me. So hopefully I don't have to do it anytime soon.
But, well, yeah. Well, if you grow your hair back, this is the best stuff out there. This is the Discovery Cape. They have five different kinds for you. I love using the Monarch Rider, the fist sample, rather. Purple one, put you in, you know, gel, you sticky hair and all that type of stuff to get the schmo right there.
Always looking that way. Always looking slick.
I appreciate that. They got all their stuff. Their Ascend Volume Cream, really good. Check them out. Use the promo code schmo. Get 10% off bluemon.com. Want to throw that out there.
Nice.
Appreciate that. But also, you know, I brought it up earlier, Henry Cejudo. Mm-hmm. You obviously have history with him, Ultimate Fighter and stuff like that. He teases the comeback, but if he really wants to make the comeback, it's to jump to 145, you know, wants to prove all the doubters, fight that he can never win. Yeah. Volkanovski, 145, yada, yada. As someone that you could attest to this, all the other bantamweights, 135, they'd say, hey, skipping the line, you know, what about, you know, the Max Holloway trilogy fight? And then what about, you know, the guys that have really stood there at featherweight division?
Yeah.
What side of the camp are you on for that?
I think he should just stick to being a dad and just stay retired. I don't know. I just feel like it's past his time now. Obviously, he's done really well and double champ. You know, there's not many that can say that. Being on his team in the Ultimate Fighter Season 24, you got to see the real Cejudo, obviously, before he became Triple C and all that. So I know him quite well. And whenever I've seen him, you know, we've only had a good relationship. And he's always been giving me good advice on my career and he's only ever wanted the best for me, even though, you know, we talk a lot of shit together to each other. You know, we support each other. But I feel like, you know, he's a bad matchup for Alex. He's going to get himself hurt if he wants to fight him. And I just feel like he's a bit too small for featherweight. But, you know, I don't want to ever count people out because a lot of people say I'm too small for my weight class. But for Alex, for Henry, I just feel like, yeah, a bantamweight was a good weight for him because he's quite compact and Still got the speed, but featherweight is just they're big boys, and I don't feel like he can carry this power over to featherweight. But you know, that's what makes fighting so great, is you just never know. But yeah, I feel like he's always teasing that the idea. It's just trying to stay relevant, really. But yeah, if you're seeing the Cejudo, stay retired, bro. You don't want it. Stay retired, brother.
I did do a podcast with him, Triple C and Schmo Show, but no, he always talks about that. But as someone who knows both of them, you really think that size is really, really a huge difference maker in that?
Yeah, because I know he's got Ali as his matchmaker, as his manager, so he's always trying to get his guys fight. So I saw him retweeting Asuka's his response saying, "Come on, Kai, step up. You know, I put the flyweight on my back, and I want to see more exciting fights." But mate, you don't need to step in, mate. Just stay on the sideline and just enjoy being retired. Like, you've had your time now. Just leave it to the young man sport. So yeah.
But you knew Henry pre-cringe.
Yes, pre-cringe.
Do you say he's responsible for saving the flyweight division when he fought Cejudo at 125? Because he goes on record and says, "I saved the flyweight division here and there." Do you see it that way as a flyweight in the UFC?
Well, he's always put on exciting fights, and obviously more eyes on us is good things. More attention, you know, more people tuning in. But for me, you know, the sport's always evolving, and he's done great things. But I would happily fight Cejudo, even though he was my coach. You know, he's not at my team. He's not at City Kickboxing. So, you know, even though we're good friends, Henry, but you can still catch these hands. If you want to come out of retirement and drop that weight down to flyweight, I would happily welcome you. I already took out a former champ, so I can take out a retired champ if you want. We can do it.
I mean, Brad Riddell just fought Rafael Fiziev. They were both friends or still are friends, and both coaching and Tiger Muay Thai, Thailand. So it happens. It's part of the sport.
The MMA community is so small. Everyone knows everyone. But you know, you got to respect why you started the sport. And when you're in the UFC, you know, you got to fight everyone in your weight class, even the one above. You have to see who's one weight class above, just because it, you know, they could drop down like what Cody did. It just happens. People try to reinvent themselves, or they want to test themselves, and it just happens. So you just have to remember why you're here. You're here to fight the best, and you know, I'm here to provide for my family. I'm here to, you know, put food on the table, and I'm here to be the best. So to do that, you got to fight everyone, and that's just the way the sport goes. But at City Kickboxing, obviously, if that was to happen with teammates fighting each other, and it was for the belt, I guess we'd have to make that decision when it happens. But it's just different. If you're not at the team at City Kickboxing, then you know, we'd fight everyone. No one's off limits.
Did you catch by chance last week the press conference for Eagle FC? Khabib's coming out with his own fighting promotion.
I heard that he's got his own promotion. You know, he's got a lot of ex-UFC guys that are on the cards. So it should be exciting, you know, more promotions, more, you know, more people tuning in, and his first time actually breaking into the American market. So it should be interesting.
We were there for the press conference in Miami, and it's interesting to see they're creating 165 pound weight division and the increments of 10, and they'll have 175. It looks like, speaking of old guys, it looked like the Hall of Famer Sugar Rashad Evans is coming out to have a fight as well, too.
Oh, sweet.
But like you said, just having more competition in the space, all it's going to do is bring more eyeballs and grow the sport.
Yeah, definitely. The more the merrier. I know in New Zealand we have a few like staple promotions, but definitely it's been hard for local fighters to kind of break through. We've got a big show in New Zealand called King of the Ring. It's a kickboxing show. Sometimes they have MMA fights, but mostly just kickboxing. But if you win that, you have to fight three times in one night.
It's old school, and like Pride days.
Yeah, like Pride. If you win that really makes you like a true champion. So a lot of our guys from City Kickboxing have won that tournament. You know, Israel's won it at middleweight and at heavyweight. Carlos has won it, Blood Diamond, Brad, Dan, you know, the list goes on. So if you win that really makes you a staple name in New Zealand for kickboxing. And then a lot of those guys have crossed over to MMA. So they've already had that experience. They've been tested three times in one night. That's pretty tough. It's about not taking too much damage. and then lasting that first and second fight, and then in the third fight is pretty much who's taking the least amount of damage usually wins. So I do some commentary on the fights. So it's nice actually learning a skill, because obviously after MMA, after my UFC career, you want to be an analyst if and you got to be able to talk about it. So it's great to upskill and learn that stuff now before I finish my career.
Well, smart. Is that a goal of yours to want to be a UFC commentator?
I wouldn't say it's a goal, but it's a great skill to learn. And then if I did want to pursue that after my career, it would be an easy transition. So, I would happily, if the UFC wanted me to do it, the best way to do it is just get thrown in there and just learn on the spot. So, you just never know. The life after fighting, it happens a lot long time before you actually retire. You want to be setting yourself up. I don't want to be doing this when I don't want to fight, and I don't want to be doing it just to get a paycheck. Obviously, I'm in the sport to be the best and provide for my family, but I'm not here to just make money and just not care about winning or losing. So when that does happen, then you need to really start to, take a step back and see, okay, is this what I really want to do? But, for now, I've still got a few years. I'm still young, 28. I've been fighting professionally since 2010. I had my MMA debut, pro debut when I was my last year of high school. So I was fighting, grown men when I had exams to get ready for. So I've been in the sport for so many years now. So when I made my UFC debut, I was more than ready. I'd fought all around Asia. I'd been an Ultimate Fighter. I'd seen so many different looks in fighting. Obviously being based out of City Kickboxing, we train with so many high caliber fighters. The standard's so high, you figure out if you're meant for this or not. If you get beat enough and you turn up the next day, then that usually says, okay, this guy's not normal. I think he's going to be fine. When I make my fights now in the UFC, I was born to do this. That's the kind of mindset I have. Like I said at the start of this interview, I tap into that Māori warrior mentality that that I channel that when I fight. So for me, it's such a privilege, such an honor to represent my people on this world stage. And I know I was destined to do this. It was actually a crazy story. My last fight, when I fought Bontorin, and I got caught in a choke. And when I was born, I actually had the umbilical cord wrapped around my neck. So I was a day late and my head was black. And my mum, everyone in the room thought I was dead. But I was, they eventually wrapped it, unraveled it, and then I was still breathing. So straight out of the womb, I was already fighting. So you take that into the what happened in my last fight when I was getting choked and I just had to stay calm, stay relaxed. I wasn't thinking about that moment, but I'd been in that moment so many times that I just had to stay calm, and then eventually the guy got tired and I put him away. So, yeah, pretty crazy.
You had the fight before anybody else, right after birth.
Yeah, that's it. Fighting the choke's already... straight out of the womb. So,
wanted to ask you as we wrap things up here, like as an alum of the Ultimate Fighter, and obviously seeing Volkanovski and Ortega fight on the last Ultimate Fighter, who do you think would be best fit as the next coach of the Ultimate Fighter?
I've heard rumors that it's going to be heavyweights and females.
Yeah,
maybe female featherweights.
The division still exists in the UFC,
if it still exists. One of my teammates, Jenna, she might be doing it if there is featherweight. So she's a taller and bigger girl, so she would fit that weight class. But as a coach, there's some good rivalries out there. Obviously, anyone that fights Izzy will be a great would make for great TV. Obviously, Izzy's quite flamboyant and he's charismatic, so great for TV. I don't know. Dan could be a great coach on there. I would love to see that. If we're just talking about City Kickboxing guys.
What about we open it up to the entire roster?
Everyone. Yeah. Everyone. I don't know. What are the great matchups right now? Anyone with Usman. He's a good talker. It's a hard one with all the lightweight division so stacked as well. Who would you recommend as a coach?
I was thinking Masvidal and Covington with rivalry. Those two talkers.
That would be a good one. Yeah, that would be really good.
That would be good. But lightweight too, you bring up a good point. Yeah. That division has so much going on as well. It's wide open too.
Yeah, I doubt. But I wouldn't do the Ultimate Fighter again. Unless it's at bantamweight. I wouldn't do it at flyweight. It took too much out of me to maintain that weight for that
long. Yeah, I was going to say.
7 weeks straight. Yeah.
So, and just be ready too, especially if someone steps up.
On a day's
up.
Notice, yeah. So if I did it again, it would have to be at bantamweight and then obviously be for a title. So
that's a fair way to put it.
Yeah.
And I guess my last question is, did you happen to catch the fight or the replays of the Woodley and Jake Paul?
I just saw the finish, yeah.
Yeah, isn't it crazy to think that some people are questioning if it was
fake
like an,
or real?
Yeah,
it's... Man, like Woodley took that fight on short notice. Obviously, he'd been training, but not like, you know, fight training to that extent for a big fight like that. I know Tommy. I don't know Tommy, but I've watched him from Love Island. That's why I first knew about him.
Oh, so you're into reality TV? There,
yeah,
it is.
I've seen Love Island. Yeah, I watch it with my wife. But yeah, I remember watching him on that and be like, oh, he's actually a boxer. That's Tyson Fury's little brother. So I was actually thinking that would be a good fight. Obviously, he's a big fighter. He's got the size that Jake usually hasn't been fighting. He's fighting guys that are a lot smaller. It's a tough one when it's a former champion and former UFC guy. You know, it's tough to watch that. I know Jake's just trying to pick his fights, you know, pick the easier fights, the guys that aren't actually his weight class, the guys that aren't really boxers, and they're predominantly MMA fighters. So great finish for him, but he's got to fight someone with more credentials and someone that's a boxer. Don't fight MMA fighters.
What about Anderson Silva?
Yeah, well, he could fight Anderson, but like I said, I want him to fight an actual boxer.
Tommy pulled out. He was technically in the boxing round.
I know. He said his rib or something was broken, but yeah. They need to rebook that fight. Or give him Joseph Parker, a New Zealand heavyweight boxer. Give him someone.
Yeah, we like Joseph Parker.
He just beat Derek Tishore.
Yeah,
we saw that too. Yep.
Yeah, him and another New Zealand boxer, David Nika, both won their fight. So it just shows that New Zealand combat sports is live and doing really well, you know, thriving in the combat community. So awesome to see, you know, fellow New Zealanders doing so well.
And thriving even with the crazy restrictions to get back into the country during the pandemic.
Exactly.
We really appreciate you coming on the Schmo Zone, the number 6th ranked flyweight in the world, Kai Kara France. And hey, next time we see you, it's either the title eliminator or best yet, the title shot.
That's it, man. I appreciate your guys' time. And hopefully, I'll send you some photos of us in Hawaii.
Yeah. If you need recommendations, let us know.
And do a helicopter ride.
There's one right there. That's it. Worth it.
Okay.
It is.
I'll put it on the list.
All right, episode 87 of the Schmo Zone podcast.
88.
Episode 88. We are out.